WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's David Remnick, and we've got something a little special for you today on the podcast, a bonus episode. It's a story from La Brega, a really interesting new series from our colleagues at WNYC and Futuro Studios, produced in English and in Spanish. And we hope you enjoy it.
Hey, quick note. There are English and Spanish episodes of La Brega. This is the English one. Si quieres escuchar en español, vuelve al feed y selecciona la versión con el título en español.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios. Futuro.
Heads up, there's some explicit language in this episode. In the summer of 1979, journalist Julio Ricardo Varela was 10 years old, and he was spending the summer with his dad in Río Piedras in San Juan.
And it was the same year that the 1979 Pan American Games were happening and were being hosted in Puerto Rico. It felt like it was our little mini Olympics.
For the opening ceremony, they commissioned this big Hollywood-style musical number.
And it was so exciting, because here they were. Here were all these athletes. And when you're 10 and you're a sports freak like I am, that's all you were thinking about. I mean, I was obsessed with it. I loved it.
Especially, he loved the Puerto Rican national basketball team, La Selección Nacional.
It was just like, it was like watching your heroes. And here were your heroes ready to represent your homeland in basketball.
Julio was born in Puerto Rico and grew up there. But when he was in first grade, he moved with his mom to the Bronx and would go back and forth to the island over the years. But he never had any doubt as to who his team was. It was always Puerto Rico. And in 1979, at the Pan American Games, it was easy to root for Puerto Rico.
Que tira, falla. Falta uno, se acabó. Gana Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico.
Because they were kicking butt. The other top team was the United States. But midway into the tournament, the U.S. squad got into a scandal. The scandal surrounded their coach, the infamously hot-tempered Bobby Knight, known for his outrageous outbursts and angry locker room speeches, like this one.
I'm gonna fucking guarantee you that if we don't play up there Monday night, you ain't gonna believe the next four fucking days!
One day during the Pan Am Games, Bobby Knight got into a scuffle with a Puerto Rican policeman, during which he allegedly hit the officer. According to the officer, Knight also called him the N-word. He was arrested and charges were pressed. It was all over the news. And it just so happens that Puerto Rico and the United States were set to face off in the final.
Bravo, preparado, la escena puesta, señoras y señores.
It was a hard-fought, close game, but the U.S. side, led by a young Isaiah Thomas, ultimately won and took home the gold. After the game, Bobby Knight told the press that the only thing Puerto Ricans were good at was, quote, growing bananas. And there was something else.
As they were leaving Puerto Rico, this is, you know, this is what is reported.
I feel like you're going to tell me that he spat in some mofongo or something.
No. He dropped his pants and he mooned Puerto Rico. He put his, you know, put his ass against the window.
No.
And he mooned Puerto Rico as they flew off. Like, the ugly American, here you go again, thinking you're better than us.
Julio remembers the incident was the only thing the grown-ups around him could talk about for weeks.
Ese Bobby Knight, qué pendejo cabrón. Egoísta americano. Maltratando a nosotros.
That freaking a-hole, the way he mistreated us.
So, throughout this history, right, to me, it's always about beating the Americans. And luckily for Puerto Rico, there have been chances to take revenge.
From WNYC Studios and Futuro Studios, I'm Alana Casanova Burgess, and this is La Brega. In this episode, David and Goliath play basketball in Athens. Without a doubt, there is a deep connection between being Puerto Rican and rooting for our sports teams. And yes, people all over the world love sports and are proud of their athletes. But in Puerto Rico, the stakes are just higher. Because Puerto Rico, despite being a U.S. colony, competes in international sporting events like the Olympics on its own, under its own flag, as if we were an independent country. Journalist Noel Algarin, who has covered sports in Puerto Rico for many years, put it this way.
The only place where we can call ourselves sovereign is in sports. In sports, we get this opportunity to be Puerto Rico, the country from the Caribbean. We get to be someone. And then we get chances in a more symbolic way to face the country that owns you in some way.
Today, we're going to tell a story about one of those chances. You could say a chance for revenge against Bobby Knight. A time when Puerto Rico faced off against the United States in basketball on the sporting world's largest stage. Julio Ricardo Varela, a journalist with Futuro Media, takes the story from here.
So at the time I was watching the 1979 game on TV, this guy was actually watching courtside.
Bueno, mi nombre es Flor Meléndez. Estoy en Bayamón, en mi casa, en el pueblo de Bayamón, en Puerto Rico.
Flor Meléndez was a coach of the team that year, and he was a legend in Puerto Rico. In a documentary about the 1979 games, you can see him screaming at players and gesturing wildly. He's looking really sharp with this thick black mustache and fro. Flor went on to become one of the national team's all-time most decorated coaches. And his story kind of runs parallel to the story of Puerto Rican basketball. So Flor grew up in a big family.
11 hermanos.
The oldest of 11 siblings. They lived in public housing.
Caserío público.
We're talking 1960. Flor started playing basketball at his local YMCA. Then as a teenager, he played in the Puerto Rican League. And pretty early on, Flor figured he had a talent for coaching. He described his coaching style as
fuerte,
tough.
Yo soy una persona que me gusta la disciplina.
Discipline heavy. And Flor got into coaching right around this kind of magic moment for Puerto Rican basketball. Coaches like Flor and league officials, they started visiting New York City and scouting the courts where New Yorkans were playing street ball. And they started convincing these players to leave their lives behind to come play professionally in Puerto Rico. Here are these amazing Afro-Puerto Ricans who learned the craft in the Mecca of the sport and brought it back.
Luchador favorece a Raymond Dalmau, que le empató. La jugada última, lograr canasto y elevar el marcador a 46.
Jugadores tenían otro ritmo de juego, más rápido, unos saltarines extraordinarios.
It was a different kind of basketball than people were used to in Puerto Rico. It was a faster rhythm of play with big dunks. And it was fun. Like, that type of basketball is fun.
Ya ahí fue un boom.
These were the boom years for Puerto Rican basketball.
Con el pase para Jimmy Corden, adelantado para Willy Quiñón,
se acabó. Puerto Rico ha derrotado a Cuba, que estaba
2-1, ganó Puerto Rico.
And as the team kept winning and becoming better, basketball in Puerto Rico became the sport. Fans filled the stadiums.
De jugar todos los días a cancha llena y convertirse en el primer deporte del país.
Escúchame, amigo, te lo vas a bufiar. Esto que vamos a rapear.
This, by the way, is a promotional rap song recorded by the team in 1986. By the 90s, many from that generation of great New Yorican players had retired. But they had inspired a new wave of Puerto Rican-born players. And those players, they took the team to even greater heights.
Ganando Puerto Rico.
Cargando con la victoria final, 87-77.
Puerto Rico, campeón panamericano, medalla de oro en estos undécimos Juegos Panamericanos.
Gold in the 1991 Pan American Games. Gold in the 1993 Central American Games. And maybe the biggest accomplishment of all, fourth place in the 1990 World Championships. Puerto Rico, the fourth best team in the world. That's pretty good. With Puerto Rico having made a name for itself on the international stage, Flor Meléndez got opportunities to coach in Argentina and Panama, but it was always clear to him that coaching the Puerto Rican national team, that was a different kind of responsibility.
Yo tengo un dicho que...
He has this saying.
La bola de baloncesto es el alma. Nosotros no tenemos ejército. Puerto Rico no tenemos ejército. Pero que a nosotros ese era el alma que nos daban para representar a nuestro país, que la camiseta era el uniforme de guerra de nosotros. Y lo tomé así.
He thinks about it like this. Puerto Rico doesn't have an army. So we, the national basketball team, we are the ones that have to represent the country. He says that the basketball is a weapon and the basketball jersey is actually a soldier's uniform. And it's this reverence, right? It's like you respect it like you respect a flag. He told me he had this ritual he would do with the national team that at the season's first practice where they would put on their national team jerseys for the first time.
Pues yo le entregaba a ellos un pin de Puerto Rico, de la bandera de Puerto Rico.
He'd go down the line and hand out little Puerto Rican flag pins to all the players.
Eso a los muchachos los emocionaba mucho, ¿viste?
He says the players would get so emotional about it. And whenever they'd face the United States in international play, those games had a special kind of weight. It was the chance for his soldiers to go to war.
Es la guerra, es una guerra, es la guerra, es la guerra, es la guerra que no hemos podido ganar para independizarnos.
The war we haven't been able to have to win our independence, he says. Puerto Rico was generally pretty outgunned in this war. The U.S., after all, was and is the global superpower of basketball, especially after the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. What happened was, a few years before, the International Basketball Federation made a change to their rules to allow NBA players in international competitions. And that change was huge.
This summer, the U.S. Olympic basketball team will make history. The dream team of Jordan, Bird, Ewing, Robinson, Pippen, Drexler, Mullen, Barkley, and Magic.
That first Dream Team that went to Barcelona in 1992 was legendary.
This collection of superstars has been unselfishly magnificent.
It wasn't just a sports team. It was a cultural phenomenon.
You've got yourself the gold medal meal.
What you want, it's what you get.
At McDonald's today!
Gold medal? It's in the bag.
And they kicked everybody's ass. It wasn't even close. It wasn't even fun to watch. They were that good.
And there it is. And the Dream Team win gold.
And from then on, the players changed. But the Dream Team was here to stay. The U.S. won gold again in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics.
The United States has won the gold.
In 2000 at the Sydney Olympics, same story.
And it's all smiles now from Dream Team 4.
And then you get to the 2004 Olympics in Athens, and the U.S. team was an institution at that point. And the first game they were going to play that Olympics was with Puerto Rico. The 2004 team was stacked. Allen Iverson, AI, Dwayne Wade, D-Wade, Tim Duncan, one of my favorite players of all time. I mean, the team even had LeBron James in his early days. LeBron James. The U.S. had the best basketball teams in the world when they were using amateur players. But when the NBA showed up, these guys were invincible in the Olympics. I mean that literally. Since NBA players were allowed to play, they had never lost an Olympic game. They were the Death Star. And if the U.S. team was the Death Star, the Puerto Rico team was definitely the ragtag Rebel Alliance. The players were mostly local stars from the Baloncesto Superior Nacional, the league in Puerto Rico. You had Jose Ortiz, also known as Piculín.
Oh, that's the leader, the rock, the legend.
That's Julio Cesar Torres. He's the filmmaker behind a great Puerto Rican basketball documentary called New Yorican Basket. You had Eddie Casiano.
Eddie, man. Eddie was the firecracker. He would go toe-to-toe with you. And if he had to fight, he would fight.
McGrady and Casiano going nose-to-nose.
Rolando Jorutined.
He was all about the craft, very disciplined, and a great defender.
And a lot of other really talented guys. Larry Ayuso, Bobby Joe Hatton. And then there was Carlos Arroyo.
Carlos Arroyo was the young gun.
Arroyo por el cristal, su primer canasto de la noche.
Anxious to prove himself with a lot of talent.
As Arroyo knocks down that jumper.
Carlos was in the NBA. He was a starting point guard with the Utah Jazz that season and was on a path to becoming a legend.
Arroyo to the angle right, gets behind tag, shaking and baking, and they double him momentarily. Now he goes right to the hoop, reverse to the right side, bank it up and in, count it, he's fouled.
At 6'2", he was a lot shorter than most other NBA guys. But Carlos was fast, and he played with energy, and he played with heart, and we all loved him. So a few weeks before the Olympics, the Puerto Rican team goes to Florida for a week of practice and a series of warm-up games against the U.S. team. This is strangely standard practice leading up to these big international competitions, and it was an opportunity to get to know the enemy. And at these games, they're playing man-to-man defense, which is what it sounds like. Each player follows a player on the other team and sticks to them. And Puerto Rico, because of their size or lack of it, you know, the Americans are bigger, they were faster. They wanted to play zone defense where you literally stay in a zone and you defend a set area of the court. During one of those games, the American coach went up to the Puerto Rican coaches and asked for a favor.
Que por favor, que no le jugáramos zona durante el juego, que jugáramos hombre a hombre, que era donde ellos nos dominaban a nosotros siempre.
He said, can you please not play zone during this game? And it was one of those, like, Flor Melendez moments to be like, insert mysterious discovery music. Interesting. They don't want to play against a zone.
Y después nosotros, pues, nos quedamos callados.
He says they kept quiet and pulled a classic jíbaro move.
Del jíbaro puertorriqueño, el hombre del campo, que siempre tiene algo cuando uno sube para allá y creen que uno no sabe nada.
He says whenever city people visit the mountains, they think the jíbaros, the country people, are simpletons.
Pues siempre el jíbaro tiene algo guardado.
But secretly, they always have something up their sleeve.
We'll be right back. This is La Brega. We're back. This is La Brega. It's the summer of 2004, and the Puerto Rican national basketball team arrives in Athens to compete in the Olympics. Their first rival is the United States Dream Team, who, by the way, aren't staying at the Olympic Village with the rest of the delegations, but in a luxury cruise ship in Athens Harbor. Julio Ricardo Varela picks the story back up.
On the morning of the game in Athens, the Puerto Rican team is expecting the worst. Rolando Orutined was in his dorm room in the Olympic Village when one of the coaches on the staff, Julio Toro, barged in the room.
Early in the morning, Julio comes in. He's on his, you know, jockey underwear or whatever it was. No shirt, no nothing, just barefoot. He's like, hey, you guys, what's going on, Julio? It's too early, man. So I want you guys to know that we're going to do something different today. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you have to wait and see.
A few hours later, the players are gathered in the locker room, and the coaches bust out their plan. They thought maybe they had found the weakness in the Death Star. They're going to do a variation on the zone defense that the Americans didn't want to play against back in Florida. For all you basketball nerds out there, a variation known as a triangle and two defense, with the goal of forcing the U.S. team to take outside shots.
So, Lou, we looked at each other like, hey, you know, never done it. We lose by 30 every time, so might as well try it.
The game was set to start at 8 p.m. Athens time, 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico. I remember I was at my home in the Boston area that day, watching the game in my bedroom, all by myself, all alone. I had a Puerto Rico shirt. I do remember that, my old Puerto Rico t-shirt. And I had really low expectations, to be honest. To jog my memory for this story, I recently rewatched the game. I'm excited. This is the first time I've put this on since 2004. You can see in the broadcast that the arena in Athens was pretty full. Everybody wanted to see the debut of the U.S. team. Before they started playing, both teams lined up for a group picture. Every single photographer turned to photograph the U.S. team. And the Puerto Rican team, they just stood there. The whistle blows. The start of the game, it was pretty tight, back and forth.
United States leading early by two.
Puerto Rico didn't really start off strong. They just played enough to keep it close.
An impressive start for Puerto Rico.
I was like, okay, all right. How long is this going to last? This will be entertaining until the U.S. scores like 80 points in a row, and then we're down by 60.
And there's the buzzer ending the first quarter.
But for me, things really kicked off in the second quarter when Carlos Arroyo found Piculín with a super cool pass. Here it comes. Look at this pass. Hello.
Carlos Arroyo. Oh, what a ball fake.
And then it begins. Something just clicks. And Puerto Rico has this sequence of amazing plays. Little by little in the broadcast, you start to notice that most of the people in the arena were rooting for Puerto Rico. And how could you not root for Carlos Arroyo that day? He had these super flashy passes. He was making incredible shots, just dominating the court.
Excellent ball handling from Carlos Arroyo. Bodies flying all over the place. Arroyo with the steal.
Nos daban las cosas se nos daban. O sea, ellos decían, pero ¿qué pasa aquí? Estos tipos no fallan.
Floor watch Puerto Rico nails shot after shot.
Lo que notamos en ellos era el mal humor. Los jugadores como frustrados.
He says he noticed the U.S. players in a bad mood, frustrated. And it was probably because the Puerto Rican strategy seemed to be working. Here's Rolando Orutined.
You know, we were pretty physical and we were really giving it to them, you know, and it's something that they were not used to it. And it was our turn to talk trash.
Go ahead and shoot it. You don't want to shoot it, right? Go ahead, shoot it. Let me see it. Let me see your shot, right?
As the second quarter ticked down, Puerto Rico's lead just kept growing.
It's hard to believe I'm saying this, but the United States trails by 20. And there's the buzzer ending the first half. A disastrous first half for the United States.
At halftime, the score was 49-27. 22-point lead for Puerto Rico. And you could see it on the faces of the American coaches. They looked so dejected. Meanwhile, at 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico, Irán Martínez, then a sports editor at El Vocero, was getting ready to turn on the game when his wife asked him to go to the mall with her to pick something up.
Mi esposa quería que fuéramos a comprar algo a Plaza Las Américas. Y yo, pero espérate.
Reluctantly, Irán goes to the mall and finds a store window with the televisions turned to the game.
Como habían 100 personas haciendo lo mismo.
About 100 people were crowded around doing the same thing. And to Irán's surprise, Puerto Rico's doing pretty well in the first minutes. But he thinks, who cares?
Yo dije, bueno, total, nos van a dar una pela.
They're just going to come back and slam us. So he heads back home in the car when he gets a call from his daughter.
Y me dice, ¿estás viendo el juego?
Are you watching the game, she asks.
Yo, no, si qué diablo, ni lo estoy oyendo por radio. Y me dice, estamos ganando.
Irán's like, no, why bother? And she says, we're winning. Soon Irán is getting frantic calls from the newspaper.
Y me dice, ¿dónde tú estás? Porque están ganando. Puerto Rico le está ganando a Estados Unidos y ganándole bien.
Where are you? Get over here. We're beating the U.S. and we're beating them good.
Y yo, no, no puede ser.
Even the Puerto Rican players in the locker room at halftime were surprised at the score. Here's Rolando.
First of all, my first thought was, are we really beating this team by 19? That was my first thought, right? Go walk into the locker room. And second was like, wow, I have more pressure now than I did at the beginning of the game. Because it's a brand new game, 20 brand new minutes. And you know they're going to come back stronger.
You thought the Americans were going to make a run eventually and come back and beat us. They had to. The third quarter is also really back and forth. The U.S. makes points.
Good drive to the basket. Pretty move from Allen Iverson.
But Puerto Rico maintains its lead.
Arroyo inside and the lead back up to 21.
The quarter closes 65-48. Puerto Rico is still leading by 17 points. And then the fourth quarter starts. And that's when things get scary. It starts with about 9 minutes left on the clock. Puerto Rico's up by 15. And LeBron James.
James wide open. And hits the three. LeBron James from downtown. And it's a 12-point game.
It was the first three for the United States in a long time. And then they just keep making baskets.
Lamar Odom cuts the lead to 12. Iverson for three. Boy, that's a huge bucket. As we go under the five-minute mark.
On the court, Rolando watched as Puerto Rico's hard-fought lead disappeared. From 22 at halftime to just 8 points.
I would look up at the clock. I'm like, to me, it's like, hurry up and, you know, finish, right? I just want to end this game.
Suddenly, it looked like the U.S. could turn the tide in the final minutes. But then... right here, baby. Right here, Carlos. Carlitos.
Fight for the rebound. Here comes Arroyo.
Carlitos!
Arroyo draws the foul and one.
That was awesome. Up by 11. Puerto Rico answers the charge. Suddenly, only 1 minute remains. Puerto Rico is back to leading by 20, and it's clear. The U.S. has run out of time to catch up.
Ahí yo dije, ah, ya aquí ganamos. No, no podemos perder.
Back in San Juan, at the offices of El Vocero, at that very moment, Iram finally exhaled. With victory near, the coach takes Carlos Arroyo out of the game.
Carlos Arroyo, the game of his life, 24 points as he comes out.
As he walks off the court, cocky as all hell, he looks at the stands and grabs his jersey and pulls forward the part where it says Puerto Rico, as if to show everybody watching the name of the place he's from. Oh, that was awesome when he did that. In part, it was a gesture of defiance to a U.S. player who had fouled him a few moments ago. But to many in the audience watching, the message was way bigger than that.
Fue como decirle a los tipos.
Flort says that it was like Carlos was telling the Americans,
nosotros somos los poderosos, ¿viste? O sea,
look, we're the powerful ones.
Y ahí empezamos a abrazarnos y empezaron, o sea, lágrimas y todo. Eso fue como una cosa.
In the newsroom in San Juan, people started hugging each other. Tears were falling.
Yo estaba como si fuera un editor novato. ¿Qué hago ahora? ¿Cómo lo hago?
Iram was so shaken up with joy that he says he felt like a brand new journalist, at a loss for how to do his job. The final score? 92-73.
It's finally happened. The United States loses an Olympic play with NBA players. They showed some signs in the second half, but dug themselves too big a hole. And an experienced team led by a brilliant performance from Carlos Arroyo put the game away.
On the court at Athens, Rolando remembers that final moment as having this dreamlike, out-of-body quality.
You come off the court celebrating, but at the same time, you're not still believing what happened, and then you're being interviewed in Italian by the Italian press. It's a lot of things happen at the same time that you are, you know, you're consumed by all this and you don't even know how to react. You are kind of numb.
Back at the offices of El Vocero, everyone was buzzing to get the paper ready for the morning. They had already decided on the cover when Iram saw a photo come in that instantly caught his eye. It's of Carlos Arroyo, from that moment he walked off the court showing off his Puerto Rico jersey. It was this quick moment on the court. If you blinked, you could have missed it. But here, captured by the camera, there's something special about that image. And Iram says,
esta es la foto.
This is the photo.
Entonces voy donde el artista y me dice, no, pues si ya estamos cerrados con esto. Y yo, no. Esta es la foto. O sea, esta es la foto de la que vamos a estar hablando en los próximos 50, 100 años.
The layout designer was like, no way, we already have the cover. But Iram's like, this is the photo. This is the photo we're going to be talking about 50, 100 years from now. This needs to be the cover.
Cuando hablemos de ese juego, esta es la foto que siempre va a tener la gente en la mente.
All night long, the island celebrates the win. The next morning, the team wakes up and heads mostly together to the cafeteria for breakfast. And as they walk through the Olympic Village,
eran todas las delegaciones.
All the delegations of athletes from around the world were there.
Y perdona que me emociono un poco, tú sabes.
And as they walked into the cafeteria,
parecía una fiesta de Puerto Rico allí porque eran los alemanes, los de Irak, todos los países parados dejaron de almorzar para aplaudir al equipo de Puerto Rico.
Flor says, you'd think it was a Puerto Rican party. Everybody from the Germans, the Iraqis, all of them stood up, stopped eating, and clapped for Puerto Rico.
Imagínate, eso uno no se lo imagina nunca que eso pueda pasar.
He says it's something one never imagined could happen. They were getting a standing ovation from the world. And it's just a fleeting moment. That's the thing that is just so bittersweet about it. It's 24 hours of joy, and then that's it. The team doesn't perform nearly as well for the rest of the tournament. They were eliminated in the quarterfinals in a game against Italy. But when Puerto Ricans remember Athens, they don't remember losing to Italy. They remember beating the United States. Rolando Orutined says people on the island still come up to him and thank him.
It was very, very emotional for the island. And up until today, people remember the date. It's like, you know, like one of those President's Day or whatever. So it's the day that we beat USA. It's like David beat Goliath.
It hasn't been 50 or 100 years yet, but the image of Carlos Arroyo grabbing the jersey has become an enduring symbol of Puerto Rican power and pride. Everybody knows that image. It was even painted as a mural in Viejo San Juan. I think it means more than ever now. To me, 2004 was before the hard times hit Puerto Rico. The debt, hurricanes, people leaving, political failures. This creeping feeling of failure, of no hope, because everywhere around you, you know, you're not winning. So I think there's something special about looking back at what happened in Athens about these sports victories. They aren't permanent, but that moment when the game is over and Puerto Rico is on top, it tells people that, yes, you can win. So that's why you got to hold up that jersey and show it off a little bit.
Ricardo Varela is a journalist with Futuro Media and co-host of the podcast In the Thick. La Brega is a co-production of WNYC Studios and Futuro Studios. This episode was produced by Marlon Bishop, Ezequiel Rodriguez Andino, and Mark Pagan. The story was edited by Luis Treyes, fact-checking by Gabriel Aviles Aponte. Engineering is by Stephanie LeBeau. Original music for La Brega was composed by Balloon, and our theme song is by Ife. Art for this piece was done by Mia Pagan. Leadership support for La Brega is provided by the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, with additional support provided by Amy Liss. Special thanks to Marga Pavón, Noel Algarín, and to Julio César Torres, who made a great documentary about basketball in Puerto Rico called New Yorican Basket, and you should seriously go see it. Oh, and Julio has one last part of the story to tell you.
There's another happy ending for this story. For Rolando Orutinen, Athens changed his life in more ways than one. He met his wife in Athens.
And she did synchronized swimming for Puerto Rico.
He met her on his way to the cafeteria the morning after the game.
I came with more than what I thought I was going to come back with, right?
Question. Do you think you winning, beating the United States kind of added, you know, it's like high school in the cafeteria. You're like, oh my God.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because I really had to battle, right? I really had to bring my A game.
And coming up next episode, the people standing on the long line of Puerto Rico's debt and their struggle to collect what the government owes them. Hasta la próxima.